Welcome to the class again. Always happy to see you coming to the meditation classes, meditating. As I told you before, the most beautiful thing to see is the person sitting and meditating. It's very beautiful. Since I was a young boy, whenever I see somebody meditating, I want to just look at the person. Look at that person. He's sitting so still. His body is still and also very balanced and dignified. He's not sitting like this. His look seems like a pyramid to me. So stable, so firm, unshakable. Like you look at it like this, looks like a pyramid. Broad base. And it represents the mind also. The mind also, very stable, very calm. So the posture of the body helps the mind also. It makes you go towards stability and calm and peace. So when I see a Buddha statue, Buddha meditating, it makes me very peaceful. So I have collected some pictures and Buddha images that look very, very peaceful. So before I go on talking about meditation objects and different kinds of samadhi, I want to say a few things about one question that somebody asked last week, which is a very important thing to remember. And also, it has a deeper meaning about the nature of our mind. So I tried to find out some books about meditation that experienced meditators have made records. And there I found that just as the stillness of meditation is coming to him or her, just as the stillness of meditation is coming to him or her, your mind is becoming still and still. Your thoughts slowing down, slowing down. And then you are becoming unaware of the surroundings, which means your mind is becoming more and more collected. You are going toward samadhi state of mind. But just as that happens, you know what happens next for some people? Just as the stillness of meditation is coming to him or her, the beginner, beginner doesn't mean a person who is just meditating. A beginner means a person who hasn't got beyond that. So you might be meditating for a long, long time, but if you haven't gone beyond a certain stage, you are still in the beginning stage. So this is very humbling to understand that. Because we've been meditating for a long time, we want to think that, oh, I know everything, I've gone very far. I'm not a beginner anymore. So if you haven't overcome a certain stage, you are still in the beginning stage. So just as the stillness of meditation is coming to him or her, the beginner may be suddenly brought back to material reality. Material reality means the ordinary reality. So brought back to ordinary reality by a sudden jerk of his or her whole body. And why does that happen? It happens to some people. It happens to me too before. Sometimes it happens, I'm very still, and then suddenly I hear some noise and I become shocked, like a shock. Wake up. So when you meditate, you go into a different world, different reality. And this is something we should understand. It is very similar to a trance state in a kind of hypnotic state, but not really a hypnotized state, but very similar to that. Some doctors understand that very well. So when you stop thinking, you are paying attention to one object, slowly and slowly your mind becomes collected and you go into a different kind of reality. So on the threshold of that reality, you find a lot of difficulty. Your mind goes back and forth because we are so familiar with our ordinary reality. So we feel safe in this ordinary reality and we want to take hold of that, keep hold on that. We don't want to let go of that. So this is a protective reaction. Protective reaction. So we want to protect ourselves. So one way of protecting ourselves is to keep ourselves in our conscious mind. To keep our surrounding in our conscious mind. We want to know what's going around, what's happening around. And we want to know the state of our body too. How is my body now? So when you meditate, when your mind becomes very collected, slowly and slowly you lose awareness of your surrounding. When you get more and more collected. And also you lose awareness of your body too sometimes. I mean, you are aware of the sensation, but you are not aware of the shape anymore. Sometimes the shape and size of your body dissolves. Because shape and size is piñati. The mind puts together that and make it into an idea. So paramattha has no shape, no size. So if you find it difficult to understand, I'll give you a simile or an example from the physics science. Newtonian science, when you read that, you will find that there's a shape, size, movement, everything there. You can predict everything. According to the Newtonian physics, the planets move around. You can predict any time, from 10 years from now, a certain planet will be in a certain place. You can tell that. It has shape and size and movement regularly. But when you go down and down to subatomic particle, you lose all that. There's no shape, no size, and you can't tell anything for sure. You can only say that there's a certain percentage of probability for certain thing to happen. Only probability. Nothing is sure anymore. So in meditation also, it happens like that. So in our ordinary state of awareness, we are aware of the surrounding, we are aware of shape and size, beings, people, east, west, north, south, time, day, year. So when we meditate, we forget about what year it is, what month it is, what day it is, what time it is. And sometimes also we forget about where we are. We are not aware of that anymore. Because all these are just concepts. You don't know where you are sitting. You don't know whether you are facing east or west. And sometimes, very strange, you don't know who you are. And that is very scary. And it sounds like a kind of mental sickness sometimes. Some people, they forget who they are because they are mentally so sick. But in this state also, sometimes when you go beyond this ordinary reality, who you are doesn't matter anymore. Who you are is just an idea. You lose all that too. And before you go into that state, you back up again and again because you are very scared of that. I have to know who I am, and I have to know where I am, and I have to know what's happening around me, because otherwise I become so unprotected. So we try to feel secure by trying to know what's happening around, and by trying to know what's happening to our body, by trying to be conscious of our body, ourself, which is a piñati actually. So this is very important to understand, because if you don't understand, then you fear more and more. I'm afraid to meditate because this happens to me. Suddenly in a jerk I wake up and have tremendous fear. So we are afraid to go this ordinary reality, to go beyond this ordinary reality. Although we want to experience something deeper, something beyond, although we are meditating just for that, the moment we cross that threshold, some people, they are afraid. They feel very insecure. So we feel secure by taking in control of our body and our surrounding. So one way of being in control is to know what's going on. So we want to know what's going on around. We want to know what's going on our body. So this is a protective reaction. When we have been tense for a long time, we become accustomed to holding on to ourselves. So this happens more to people who feel anxiety, insecure. Especially, for example, imagine that you are in a deep forest and there might be tigers, snakes, and other animals around. Because you know, I live in a forest and there were tigers. Not anymore. There were tigers. Now they say, the hunters say, tigers are afraid of human beings. They run away. So when we first go into a place which is new to us, we feel very insecure. Because there's real danger that tigers and snakes, and tigers you can protect yourself if you are in an enclosed area. But snakes, very difficult. They are so small they can squeeze in and come into the hole, into your heart. Because the hearts are built in bamboos, not really sealed. Insects, animals, crawling insects, many things coming in. So when you sit and you hear some noise like shh, suddenly you wake up. And you are really afraid of that. Your body really reacts to that. What is that? You feel very insecure. And when you find out that, oh, it's just a lizard, okay, go back and meditate. But still, you want, your mind is not totally in your meditation. You are still keeping alert. So if you keep yourself alert and trying to find out what's going on in your surrounding, it's very hard for you to develop deep samadhi. You are still aware, you are still mindful, to a certain extent only. But you cannot go beyond that. So to go beyond that, you need to develop some kind of trust and security. So that is also very important. So if you feel fear when you meditate, it is very good to meditate with another person whom you trust, your teacher or a family member or a good friend. So you feel that, well, if anything should happen to me, then somebody is around to help you. For beginners, this is very important. And also, try to develop trust in yourself. In Burma, when we meditate, many of our teachers say, surrender your body to Buddha. Symbolically, you give yourself away to the Buddha. This is not mine anymore. So, if it's not mine anymore, then I don't need to worry about it. So this is symbolically giving away. So, try to find out some ways to make yourself feel secure, to trust yourself and to trust your surroundings. So especially in this place, you don't need to be afraid of anything. Everybody around here is meditators, and the place is very safe and secure. So before you meditate, that's why it is important to develop some sort of metta, because metta makes you feel quite secure. I live in forest, sometimes with no building, no dwelling places, just sitting under a tree, sometimes just a simple hut, sometimes made from ropes, tent made from ropes. So we sit and meditate. When we develop really strong metta, that strong metta or loving kindness makes us feel very secure. And I've been living in forest for more than 20 years, never been hurt by anything. Really deep forest sometimes, only a few huts surrounding to get my food. I want to go deeper and deeper into the forest, far and far away from civilization, because civilization is so disturbing. So anyway, if you trust yourself, then that means you feel more secure. So trust yourself, trust your practice. For beginners, it is very important to find a very secure surrounding. So we become accustomed to holding on to ourselves. We are so attached to ourselves. We try to protect ourselves all the time, as it were, keeping a grip of ourselves. See if you can really feel that I'm trying to be in control of my body and mind. We are always trying to be in control. But in meditation, if you try to do that, you cannot develop a deeper understanding and go beyond. You learn to let go, let whatever happen, because some things that you experience in meditation are so extraordinary that if you try to be in control, you back up. You cannot go further. We're keeping a grip of ourselves. We do this unconsciously. That's a problem. Because consciously, you try to give up the control. Consciously, you try to let go, but unconsciously, you are afraid, you are insecure. So you are still trying to be in control. Because this fear or this anxiety has been ingrained in us, no matter, we don't know how long. might be millions of years. It's ingrained in our DNA, I think. So this is not an easy thing. Unconsciously, to guard against the threat of psychological disintegration. Think about that, psychological disintegration. What does that mean? Because integration means we have the idea of who we are. Disintegration means it's anatta. No self, no control. So are you willing to go into that state? There's no self, there's no control. There's just physical and mental process going on. The moment you try to control it, you're out of it. You're out of your meditation. So meditation is a kind of surrender. So we always want to be in control of ourselves. I know who I am and I know what I am doing. And with that attitude, you cannot cross the threshold. There's no I anymore, and there's no I meditating anymore. And you are not in control of your meditation even. You are just purely aware of what is happening. Just pure awareness without control. Just like you are looking at on the road. You go outside and sitting and looking at the road. Cars going. You are not in control of any car. They're just coming and going. You can just sit and watch. I know what's going on, but I have no control. So you need to develop that sort of mental state. No control. That's why I try to tell people, don't resist, don't control. Just let go. Just be a kind of a uninvolved observer. So psychological disintegration, which anxiety brings with it. So the moment we see we lose in control, the moment we don't feel like I am anymore, we have a certain kind of fear developing. But this doesn't happen to everybody. Some people, for some people it happens, it really happens. So then we let go into the meditative process. So whenever that happens, try to calm down again and just tell yourself that there's no danger, no fear. Trust yourself, trust your practice. Go on. We are no longer holding on to ourselves. When you are meditating, we are not holding on to ourselves or keeping a grip of ourselves. So see if you are doing that, trying to be in control, trying to do something. Our mind suddenly feels that we are in danger, and the sudden jerk of the body is a protective reaction to put us on guard again. So the moment we cross over to another reality, we wake up in a jerk. We want to be in control again. So this is a kind of protective reaction of the body and mind. This sudden jerk of the body is not very common, but it may be quite frightening. So some people express that. If you have not experienced that, then you might think that, oh, that person, why is that? I don't experience that. I have no fear. But that person said that he or she has fear when she meditates or when he meditates. So just tell yourself, just encourage yourself, it will go away. As you develop deeper peacefulness and deeper wisdom, it will go. So this can happen a few times, going back and forth for a few times. Sometimes the beginner may be disturbed by a sudden feeling of acute panic. So the first thing is that your body wakes up in a jerk. Your body reacts. But in another case, the body is still very quiet. The body doesn't shake. The body is in a still position. But the mind reacts. Sometimes the beginner may be disturbed by a sudden feeling of acute panic just when the stillness of mind comes to him. Meditation is abruptly brought to a halt. It comes to a stop. You wake up. This is another variety of the unconscious protective reaction. A person who is chronically tense and anxious continually holds himself in check. We want to keep in check of what is going on. He feels that if he were to let go, something terrible would happen to him mentally. So he feels that if I let go, I don't know what will happen. Maybe something very strange can happen. and I may not be in control. I may not be able to come back to my normal way of being. There are many such people among us, actually. So that's why, to develop self-confidence and courage, we need to practice keep 5 precepts. That makes you feel very courageous. Because if you are keeping 5 precepts, you have less fear. This is real. If you believe that you are a good person, a kind person, a virtuous person, that gives you a lot of strength and courage. And also developing metta also, you are a loving person, that makes your mind very calm and peaceful. You are protected by your own metta. Sometimes you feel like there's a kind of shield surrounding you, your metta field. It's like radio waves, it's like magnetic field. You feel that you are protected by your loving kindness. Whoever comes into this field will not hurt you. Even though they come to you with the intention to hurt you, when they cross into your field of kindness, they change their mind. Oh, I'm not going to say anything. I'm not going to do anything. So this is very real. So try to develop loving kindness. The stronger you try to develop this kindness, the stronger the feel of your metta will be. And you will feel protected by your own metta. So many people ask me, how do I protect myself? You protect yourself by developing metta and also by developing mindfulness. Both of them can protect you. And also trust in the Buddha, trust in your practice. And another thing is, before you go into deep samadhi meditation, sit down and reflect on your good qualities, develop metta, and reflect on the qualities of the Buddha, and then you tell yourself that, I'll go deep into my practice, but if any danger comes, I will wake up. If any real danger comes, so you can determine that, and if you do that for a few times, you'll find out that if something happens, you're already awake. This is very real. Because in some places where we live, we have to do that. Not only that danger, if you want to get out of your samadhi at a certain hour, you can do that too. You sit and meditate, and before you meditate, you say that I'm going to sit for 2 hours. After that, I wake up. And you go deep into samadhi and meditate. And then when the time comes, you're already awake, and you look at the clock, just the right time. It's about 1 or 2 minutes, plus or minus. And when you go into real sleep also, and meditators can do that. So you have meditated and you want to sleep. You really want to go to sleep. Normal, natural sleep. So you tell yourself, now I'm going to sleep. But after 4 hours or 5 hours of sleep, I will get up. Like say, for example, 12 o'clock in the midnight, and you say, I'll get up at 4:30 in the morning. And then with that determination in your mind, keeping that determination in your mind, slowly you let go, fall into sleep. And when it's 4:30, you wake up. So maybe you have heard or read about these things in the books. This is real, you can do that. So the same thing you can do. If any danger, real danger, comes, I will be awake. And I'll know what to do. In some cases, when people meditate for a long time, sometimes they can meditate the whole day without getting up even. They have to do that. In the meditation instruction books, they say that you have to do that. You have to do this determination. Because there can be real danger. What happens if a fire breaks out? Forest fire in the forest is quite common. So you determine that if there were any danger, I will be awake. I wake up. So this is a very good question somebody asked last week. So please ask me questions like that and give me time to prepare so that I'll give you a very clear answer. So this week I would like to talk a little bit more about Piññatti and Paramattha again, and then I would like to talk about 3 different kinds of samadhi. So Paramattha is something you experience directly without thinking about it. Paramattha is the inherent quality of mental and physical process. In fact, paramattha is the qualities.
and you cannot know anything beyond qualities. So these scientists are trying to find out what's the ultimate reality, and until now they haven't found that, because the deeper they go, the more it becomes elusive. Matter has no shape, no size. You know, the smallest particle of matter, something like photon, light is photon, actually. It is just a packet of energy. It has no mass. Can you imagine something with no mass, just pure energy? It's light. So what's beyond that? Nobody can tell. So the only thing we can know is the quality, nothing more than that. So in meditation also, direct experience is the quality. For example, when you touch something, what do you feel? You feel it's warm. That's the quality. You feel it's soft. That's also the quality. You feel some sort of vibration, movement. That's also quality. But you cannot touch leg. Leg is something you put together in your mind. You cannot tell the quality of your leg. You cannot really touch your leg, actually. So try to understand this. And in the beginning, it's very hard to understand. Oh, what? I cannot touch my leg. Here it is. But how do you know that this is a leg? Because you put together many ideas. If you touch like this, something, you close your eyes and you touch something, and can you tell what it is? Just touch a small area. Can you tell what the shape is? For example, you touch like this. Can you tell the shape? You cannot. You can only tell the shape where you get in contact. It's a flat surface. But you cannot tell the shape of the bowl. How do you tell the shape of the bowl? Because you look at it and you put the idea together. Or you can touch like this. And you can say that, oh, I know the shape. It's a round bowl. It's hollow inside. It's about 1 centimeter thick. How do you tell that? You put so many data together. You are putting many, many data together. But if you take only one data, you cannot tell anything except the quality. It is hard and it is cold. That's all. Nothing more than that. So in meditation, we come down to this simplest, pure sensation. Nothing added. That's what I tried to talk about last Thursday. But I don't expect that people can understand it right away. Pure, nothing added, direct experience. That's what we're trying to get. Because this is really what is happening all the time, but the moment we experience something, we try to put together many ideas to form an idea about it. From the past memories, and from the eyes, and from other informations too. We try to understand this idea. What is paramattha? Because this is the object of our meditation, vipassana meditation. Unless you know what it is, unless you can keep your mind on paramattha, you cannot really develop deep insight. You can develop deep samadhi though. You can develop samadhi by concentrating on any object. Sound or shape or color or even a word or idea, even nothingness. Once I try to meditate on nothingness, try to develop some samadhi by practicing anapana, and then try to develop some samadhi by staring at a disc, round, light brown, earth color disc, staring at it and keeping my mind into it. And even when I close my mind, it's in my mind. So I try to get inside that image. And then later I try to develop, got a piece of plywood and cut a circle inside and put that on the window so that I cannot see anything outside, trees or houses. And look at the hole and see that this is a hole. A hole means there's nothing there. So just staying in the hole and thinking that nothing is there, nothing is there, nothing is there. And it's very strange. Your mind can get absorbed in this nothingness and become very peaceful. Very, very peaceful. So even now I like to do that, but I don't want to do that anymore, because you cannot develop deep insight. You can get absorbed and you can become very peaceful. You know why it is peaceful? Because where there's nothing to disturb your mind. You cannot think about nothingness. It's the end of everything. It's very similar to Nibbana too, in a way. You're just looking at nothingness and then trying to keep that nothingness idea in your mind. Sometimes you close your eyes and you can still see bright hole. And you are thinking nothing, there's nothing. Hard to talk about, but it feels really peaceful. So what I mean is that you can develop samadhi by concentrating on any object. You can just sit and recite Coca-Cola, 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 the whole day. Your mind can get absorbed. Any word, any sound, any shape, any image, any idea. Once you can get absorbed into it, you develop samadhi. So that's the meaning of samadhi, to get absorbed into some concept, some non-changing sensation or idea even, non-changing. But when you want to develop deep insight about the reality, you have to be in touch with reality. But in fact, we are always in touch with reality, always. But we change that reality into concept. All the time we are changing reality into concept. What we see reality actually, but immediately after that, we change that into concept. We see only colors. We don't see Alex sitting there. Actually, we see colors. Black color, red color, brown color, white color. But from our past experience, we know that this is a human being, and this is somebody I know. If you forget about your memory, you don't know who it is. So if you see something you have never seen before, what idea do you form? For example, here people bring many different kinds of fruits and cakes and breads. Sometimes I don't know what this is. I have to ask people, what is this? I want to know what I'm eating. You see, I feel insecure if I don't know what I'm eating. So when we don't know something, we feel insecure. We want to know, what is this? How do you make this? Is there something that is unagreeable for me? I want to know. So if people bring something and I put that down, fruit or cake or any kind of pastry, very beautiful shaped pastries here, something it looks like a prawn. And I was looking at this, what is this? Sometimes they bring swine meat. You see swine meat. But if they don't tell me, I won't know. And before I eat that, can I guess the taste? No way. I can sit there and think about what will it taste like and spend the whole day. We'll never find out. And can I ask another person to tell me how it tastes like? Tell me how it tastes like. And this person will be sitting and telling me the whole day how it tastes like, and I'll be sitting and listening till we don't know. The only way to find out is put that into your mouth. Chew that. Then you know what it is. So we are always in contact with reality, but immediately we change that into concept. So when I see the fruit, some very strange fruit I've never eaten before, like kiwi. The first time I ate kiwi here in Australia. I don't know what it is, but I can see the color. And when I put all the different color together, I get a shape. So you know in painting there's a system called, method called pointillism. You take a very sharp something, take the paint, and then you put small points together, make it into a big picture. So, to take as an example, we see only small color, but we put them all together and create a shape in our mind. It's our mind which creates a shape. Our eyes cannot see shape. This is also another difficult thing to understand, but try that, you will get that. We cannot see shape, we only see color. If you take away color, what is there to see? Nothing left. Everything disappears. So it's the same thing with sound. We hear sound which is real, the quality. We don't hear words. Words is something we create in our mind. We learn. It's a learning process depending on our memory. So when you go to a country where somebody speaks a language which you don't understand, you hear the sound, you don't understand the meaning. The sound is real, but the words and the meanings are something we created. It's very useful. I don't mean that it's useless. But when we want to develop deeper understanding of the reality, which is beyond the ordinary reality, we need to go beyond words and meanings. So when a meditator is meditating, when he's really mindful and really sharp on the point, on the moment, somebody speaking near, this person can hear the sound but will not understand the meaning. So this is one of the tests. In some monasteries in Burma, they do that. When somebody develops some sort of samadhi, the teacher will say, now you go and sit near somebody, a group of people talking, sit there and meditate. Deliberately, the teacher put the student in a noisy place, like kitchen here. You go and sit in the kitchen and listen to people talking. And if you can really become mindful, you hear the sound, but you don't understand the meaning. It doesn't disturb you anymore, because it doesn't create any idea in your mind. Just passing away, passing away, passing away. Sound passing away. So for a beginner, it is difficult. Even here to sit, there are cars going on the road. Sometimes you get disturbed. Oh, so many cars going on the road. But when you become really mindful, you hear the sound very barely, but it doesn't disturb your mind. So try to find that out more and more. What is Paramattha and what is Vinyati? And you cannot see movement even. This is nothing very strange to understand, because we always think that we see movement. Movement is the domain of your bodily sensation, not the domain of your eye. So how do we think that we see movement? Something appears and disappears, and nothing appears and disappears. Like say, you have a computer screen and you have a programming which will flash a very small dot and it will disappear, and another flash very close to the same dot, not on the same space but very close nearby, flash, disappear, another dot, flash, disappear. It happens very quickly. What will you see? You will see a dot moving, but actually it's not a dot moving. So try to understand that. There's no such thing as movement, actually. You cannot see a movement. Something appears and disappears. Another thing appears in a different place and disappears. Another thing appears in a different place and disappears. So take another example. Light a candle. Can you move the flame from this place to that place? Think of the flame only. Don't think of the candle. Just try to get your mind on the flame. A flame is something burning and disappearing all the time. So you cannot move the flame of a candle from this place to that place. When you brought it here already, that flame has disappeared a long time ago. But something gives the continuity, keeps burning. So try to get closer and closer to this idea of impermanence. That's why Buddha said, Naicham Navava Sankara. All the conditions, phenomenon are always new, always new. There's nothing old. Old means the same thing, but there's no such thing as the same thing. So you might have read in some philosophy books, I don't remember who said that. One person said that you cannot get into the same river twice. But I would like to say that you cannot get into the river even once. Where is the river? What do you mean by river? What do you mean by you? When you take the big picture of a river, then you get the idea of river. When you think of the person as something enduring, then you can say this person goes into that river and comes back again, and he cannot go back into the river the same river again because the water is moving. But even the idea of river is something you put together in your mind. The idea of a person is also something you put together. And instantly it is always changing, all the time. And take another example, so that you will have many examples and get the meaning very, very clear. Take a big bag, canvas bag, fill that with sand, very fine grained sand. and then tie it with a rope and hang it on a long rope. You make a small hole at the bottom. What will happen? The sand will fall down, drip. What will you see? You'll see a line. Is that line real? Is that line really there? No. It seems like a line. And then you pull the bag and then push it again. What will you see? You'll see a line moving. Is that moving line real? No. There's no moving line. There's just fine grains of sand falling in different places, giving you an illusion of a line. And it will be moving back and forth. You can see that, oh, this line is moving back and forth. But there's no line. There's only fine grain of sand falling, falling, falling in different places. So if you forget about the best sandbag and just look at the line, you get a better idea. There's no line actually. So it's the same thing with our body too. It's always arising and passing away. So the shape is not the domain of your eye. It's something the mind puts together. So the smell also, you can get the smell, and we say that, oh, this is rose. But the smell is not rose. Rose is something, an idea that you create in your mind. The smell is real. The name is what you have learned, and you put this smell with the shape and color of the rose, let's say, the ordinary reality rose. So you see, you learn the name, and you put the smell and the shape and the name together. If you don't put things together, how do you understand? You understand as something, some sensation only, pure sensation. So sometimes my teacher asks me, is sugar sweet? He asked me again and again when I was studying meditation. I said, what a question to ask me whether sugar is sweet. I said, yes, sugar is sweet. And he said, really? I thought, what does he mean by that question? I can't understand the question. Why is he asking me, is sugar sweet? And he said, is the name sugar real? Or is that a concept? I said, the name is just a name, it's a concept. Mm-hmm. Then he said, so the name is not sweet. I said, yeah, you're right, the name is not sweet. Then he said, what is sweet? How can you say that? What is sweet? It's not sugar anymore. You can only say that sweet is sweet. And even this name sweet is a name only. And what is that? Some sensation on your tongue, which you call sweet, and you put that idea together with another thing, or this is sweet. So if you show sugar to somebody, and don't tell the name or the taste, and ask the person, what is this? And what is the taste of this? They'll never be able to tell you. So we create our own reality. And this is necessary and important to function in our ordinary way of being. But this becomes a hindrance in understanding extraordinary reality. This reality is also reality. I'm not invalidating this ordinary reality, because Buddha talked about different levels of reality. This Samudhi Satya truth, agreed upon truth or conventional truth, is a truth actually. It's not a lie. It's a truth. But when we want to understand Paramattha Satya, which is a kind of a transcendental reality, we have to go beyond this ordinary truth. But we get stuck in this ordinary truth. We don't want to let go. We get trapped in this truth, ordinary truth. So my teacher, many times he tells me that we are trapped in concepts. We are imprisoned by concept. So first he talked about that. At first I couldn't understand. What does he mean? We are trapped. We are imprisoned in concept. I couldn't understand, but I tried to understand. What does it mean? What is concept? How are we imprisoned in concept? But after a few months, I began to understand. Yes, really, we are imprisoned in concept. What makes you happy and unhappy? Ideas. if you really get in touch with Paramattha, there's nothing to make you happy or unhappy. So I found out that, yes, idealism and all the isms, communism, democracy, or Buddhism, or whatever ism, it's a prison, actually. Whatever ism. Because we get attached to that idea. We are in prison. We are not free. So if you really want to be free, you have to go beyond all these isms and concepts and ideas. In this ordinary reality, even better, because you are not in prison anymore. You know what's going on, you can function very well, you can adapt in any place. Much easier if you understand the other reality. Because we take this reality so seriously that it hurts. And still we can't let it go, it hurts. Yet we took hold of a burning ember and say, it burns. Why don't you let it go? So try to understand why we are meditating, what we are aiming at, what kind of reality that we are trying to understand. But this is just another step from this conventional reality to another real reality. Because I don't want to use the word ultimate, because I discussed about this word ultimate with Venerable Nyanavisari, and we got so confused that we had to drop this word ultimate. What do we mean by ultimate? Very difficult to talk about. But anyway, a deeper reality, which is not created by our mind. But even in that case, we have to understand this reality and go even beyond that. There's another reality there, which is beyond mental and physical process. So from this conventional reality, we go to Paramattha reality, where there's just process, there's just phenomena, nothing lasting, no being. And from that, we go to another reality where there's no phenomenon anymore, which is also another reality, very difficult to understand and very difficult to talk about. But that will come later, and I will try my best to talk about. And I hope that I don't make you more confused. Because there are things that are beyond words. We try our best to talk about it. So after talking about this Paramattha, and we will talk about it more and more later, let's talk about three different kinds of samadhi. So, the first samadhi that I want to talk about is jhana. You've heard the word jhana? It is to get absorbed into some idea. Like metta. You develop metta, you think about loving thoughts. Oh, may I be happy, may I be peaceful. And after a while, you really feel that, I really want to be happy. But it is very strange. People are very strange. Do you really want to be happy? You should ask these simple questions again and again. Do you really want to be happy? What do you mean by happy? And do you know how to be happy? How to get this happiness that you want? And whatever we do every day, we are doing that because we think that that will make us happy. And we have been doing that for so long. Have you found that happiness? So, anyway, we can develop that happiness. I want to be happy. And we can share that wish with other people also. Just like me, he also wants to be happy. She also wants to be happy. Just like me. So you are putting yourself and another person in the same level. No difference. Just as I want to be happy, he wants to be happy and she wants to be happy. No difference. Can I have the same wish for another person? Equal wish. No better and no worse. You can't say that, well, I wish other people happier than me. No, that is not real metta. You have to put together. So after a while you can really feel that I really want that person to be happy. So in the beginning it's difficult to have that sort of kindness toward total strangers. So think about your parents or your teachers or your brothers and sisters or your spouse. But this is another difficulty isn't it? Because I tried to teach metta meditation to somebody and that person said, I don't want to think about myself. I said, well, just develop metta to yourself. May I be happy? And that person said, I don't want to think about that. I want to forget about myself. I hate myself. Because she has done so many different things, so many terrible things to me. That she was very aggressive and unkind. But she cannot be kind even to herself. So I asked her, can you have metta for your parents? She said, I hate my father. He was an alcoholic and he left the family and he died. So we were very poor and we had a very difficult time when we were young. And he didn't care about us. He didn't love us. So I said, what about your mother? Oh, when my father left her, she went and lived with her boyfriend. What happened to you? Well, my brother and I, somehow we tried to survive, and my mother, sometimes she come and give us some money to eat. And I said, what about your teachers? She said, I can't think of my teacher. I can't think of them as somebody who has done something good to us. Very difficult to have real metta for yourself and for other people. At last, I got so disheartened. And I thought, this is something very strange. Because normally we think that we love ourselves, and at least we love somebody. There's somebody in our life that we love. But this person says that there's nobody she can love. Nobody for whom she has loving kindness. And at last I ask her, isn't there anybody in this world that you can really feel kindness? And after a while she said, well, I love my dog. And it's not my dog actually. It's the dog of a person with whom I share the house. It's not really my dog, but I love that dog. And I find out slowly and slowly that there are some people for whom it is very difficult to develop metta. And this metta meditation is very important for vipassana. That's why I'm trying to emphasize it. If you don't have metta, your heart is dry. You cannot even practice vipassana. You need the base, the foundation, metta, and also trust and respect for Buddha, respect, trust and respect for yourself, trust and respect for your teacher, and trust in the practice also, the method you're practicing. If you don't have those things, no point in practicing meditation. Sometimes you can fool yourself, just imagine that I'm happy, I'm peaceful. But you cannot get beyond that. You can just imagine, not real. So, you can get absorbed in any idea. Metta also, and also Buddha. Sometimes I get very absorbed in thinking of the quality of the Buddha. Makes me feel very happy, very peaceful, because the quality of your mind or the state of your mind depends a lot on the object of your mind. So when you think about somebody you hate, you feel hate, you feel anger, you don't feel peaceful. But when you think about somebody who is very loving and kind and peaceful, somebody like a Buddha, just imagine somebody like that. So I, as you, I don't have any direct contact and relationship with the Buddha, but I had personal relationship with my teacher. My meditation teacher, my first meditation teacher was, I don't know whether he's living or not, is a layman, a musician and a musical instrument maker. And every day I think about him because he made a big turning point in my life. He contributed that. He was so calm and peaceful all the time. It's amazing. To see a monk calm and peaceful is not something extraordinary to say. But for a layman to be so calm, peaceful, so kind, I never saw him get upset. I never saw him becoming very arrogant, putting down another person, getting angry. saying bad things about people. So we get five precepts very well without effort. He never talk about them. And he's kind to everybody, but he never talk about metta. That is something very extraordinary. He doesn't say that I'm a loving person. He doesn't think like that. He's very kind and loving, and people love him very much. But he was not biased to anybody. Very strange person, very developed, highly spiritually developed person. He doesn't get attached to anybody, any man or any woman, young or old, but he treats everybody equally. And he was not married, he was looking after his mother, an old mother. He said, as long as my mother lives, I will look after her, but after that I'll become a monk. But not before. He loved his mother very much. And he's the only son, and his father is dead also. So he's really looking after his mother, very loving, with real nature, not just as a duty. He really loves his mother. And his mother also loved her son very much. So, to see somebody like that also makes you understand something very deeply. It's beyond words even. Not about Nibbana, you see. To talk about loving kindness is also very difficult. Because for me, I had very bad relationship with my parents. Many times I really hate my parents for not doing enough for me. But this person, he loved his mother with all his heart. And this mother also loved this son with all her heart. They are really devoted. But not too attached. This is very strange. Not too attached. So whenever I think of him, it makes me very peaceful. This person is extraordinary. And also, another teacher, who is a Seado, an old Seado, he died when he was 90 years old. He was also very mellow and kind and sweet. He never treated anybody with disrespect. I never saw him do that. I never saw him getting upset. I never saw him worried about anything. Sometimes I got worried when I went to America with him. Before we went, the time was getting very close, because we had already got our plane ticket and flight schedule. But we didn't have our passport yet. So I said, Seado, in a week we have to leave. But we don't have our passport yet. He said, don't worry. Very simple, don't worry. How can he say that? How can he just stay like that and not worry about something like that? It was very hard for me to understand in the beginning. So people just love him. He couldn't speak a word in English. But many Westerners just look at him and they feel very amazed. Look at this person, so gentle, so mellow. Even in his voice, you won't hear any tension in his voice. Very soft and sweet voice. Very calm, but with a lot of energy and strength. Not weakness. This gentleness and softness together with strength, confidence. So you cannot learn something like that from a book. You have to be with that person, and you can see that he is like this, and I can be like him. That gives you a lot of courage, hope. So it is very important to learn meditation from a teacher. Although you can learn basic meditation instruction from any book, basic instruction is not difficult. From any book you can learn basic. But to really develop these higher qualities, you have to be with a teacher who is a living quality, living example of loving kindness, living example of contentment, serenity, peacefulness, liberation. He's so free. So you have to live with that person for a long time. I lived with my teacher for about 4 or 5 years. So the longer you live with that person, the more you learn. This is real. He's not playing a role. Because anybody can play a role. You can watch a movie and somebody is there, he's acting the part of a very serene and developed person. But this is just acting. So only after you've lived with a person for a few years, then you really find out. So when you think of the Buddha, try to find out more and more about the Buddha. his purity, his freedom, his wisdom, his metta, his karuna, and his selflessness, to get immersed in this quality. And you will feel that, because the mind consciousness depends on the object. When you keep a symbol, this is a symbol only, an idea. Buddha is an idea for us, because we think about it. So the idea of the Buddha, his purity, his freedom, his serenity, his wisdom, his metta and karuna, the more you think about it, the more your mind will get in tune into that quality, and you feel that quality in you, inside you. Because the more you think about Buddha's metta, the more you feel it. It becomes yours. And you aspire to that sort of thing. I want to be like that. So you set a goal like that. This is my goal. This is my ideal. Although I will not be able to reach that higher ideal like a Buddha, at least I can get closer. At least I can get to a certain stage. So anybody who become enlightened, a disciple of the Buddha even, is called a new Buddha. Anu here means follower. So he was the leader and you are a follower. He was enlightened and you can also be enlightened. You are also enlightened if you have attained that enlightenment. So Anu Buddha, you become an Anu Buddha. You aspire to become an Anu Buddha. So to have a very clear idea of what we want to do and what our goal is, very important. Vaguely, well, I want to meditate and I want to be happy. You don't have very clear idea, so you don't have enough energy. So the more you can define your goal, your ideal, the more energy you will have. The more you can put time and energy into what you do. So be very clear about what you want to do. So I'm giving you just general idea so that you can develop this idea more and more. So before you meditate, just reflect for a few minutes about the purity, the serenity, the peacefulness, the freedom, the wisdom, the metta and karuna of the Buddha. And you can get absorbed into that. Be very calm and peaceful. After that, if you meditate on vipassana objects, your mind will stay there longer. Because this idea of the Buddha conditions your mind to let go of other worldly cares, and you don't think that these are important anymore. Oh, about my car, about my business, and about this and that, about my bank account, about that bill. Those things can wait. Because sometimes when you sit and meditate, you think that, well, I'm here to meditate for an hour. You prepare for that, but as you sit and meditate, you think about, well, I have to pay that bill. I forgot to do that. Oh, I need to make a call. Yeah, that's very important now. Just when you start to meditate, something important is coming into your mind. It distracts you. So that's why I tell you, prepare your mind. This preparation is very important. Don't think that you're wasting your time because you're preparing. Because the more you prepare yourself, the easier for you to meditate. You can let go of all those things. That bill is not important. That telephone call is not important anymore. It can wait for 2 hours. Or any other thing. Even somebody said something to you, even at home somebody had something happened. No, important. You will find the best way to deal with those things. But right now, leave everything behind. You can let go of that. So when you think of somebody like a Buddha who is so free, it makes it easier for you to let go of other people. So for me, my real experience is my teacher. So when I think about him, I can let go. I get some feeling of his freedom, his detachment, his contentment. So prepare your mind like that. So when you can get really absorbed into this object, a disc, white or brown, or just even a hole, or even metta meditation, or even Buddha monosati meditation, when your mind gets really absorbed and stay there without getting distracted, that is called jhana. So jhana has two meanings. It means getting absorbed. This is one meaning. Another meaning is burning. It burns the defilements. Temporarily at least. So another samadhi is called upachara jhana. This jhana is called apana jhana. You get really absorbed and you forget about everything else, and your mind gets really into that object and stay with that. It's unshakable. Sometimes you can't even move your mind to another object. It goes back into the same object and stays there. Very, very strong absorption. But that is quite difficult to develop. But you can develop upachara jhana quite easily, which means excess concentration, they call, which means closer. You are not inside, but you are very close. Like you come to this place, you are not inside this hall, but you are just near the door. So upachara jhana is like that. So they say, they call that as excess concentration. It means very close to absorption, which means your mind can stay with that object for a few minutes and you get distracted for a while and you come back again. It's distracted a little bit again and you come back again. It goes on and on like that. That is enough to practice vipassana. So to be able to practice vipassana, you don't really have to develop absorption jhana. But you need a certain amount of quietness and stability of your mind. But even if you haven't developed that amount of samadhi, you can just go ahead and meditate on vipassana object. Let's say when we meditate, we concentrate our mind on breathing. For quite a long time, you can stay with your breath. So in the beginning, when I meditated, I tried to breathe very deeply. Unnatural. I know that it was unnatural, but it was very useful. Because when I breathe deeply like this, I stay with my breath. Easier. You cannot run away. Because it takes up your whole mind to stay with that. But you cannot do that too long because you get very tired after a while. The body gets very hot. So in the beginning, I sit only for 10 minutes doing that. Very tired after a while. But when you get used to it, you don't get tired anymore. You don't even feel that you're breathing very hard. You're very calm and your body is doing the breathing. Your mind is with the breath. You are not thinking of anything anymore. You cannot think about anything anymore. But after you develop a certain level of concentration, go back to normal breathing. Because if you stay with this gross, forced breathing, you can be aware of this gross sensation and your samadhi will be gross. Because the samadhi depends on the object. When the object is very gross, the samadhi is also very gross. Very coarse. So when you breathe normally, your breath becomes very soft, slow. If you can stay with that soft and slow breath, your concentration becomes stronger and stronger. But the more the object becomes subtle, the more you can stay with that subtle object, the stronger your concentration becomes. So it is useful, but you have to let go of that forced breathing after a while. So you need to know what is useful and when to let go of that. So if you do that without developing any samadhi, you can develop some sort of concentration. And after a while, you feel this air moving in and out. You can really feel it. You can feel it as just pure sensation. In the beginning, you think that I am breathing, the air is coming in, the air is going out, and I feel that near my nose. After a while, you forget about I am breathing. There's no I and there's no breathing anymore. There's no air coming in, there's no air going out. There's no nose anymore. There is sensation and awareness. And that becomes pure sensation and pure awareness. You are not thinking about sensation anymore. You are directly in touch with this sensation. And it is just sensation. Not even air anymore. Air is an idea. No sense is an idea. Coming in is an idea. Going out is another idea. And I'm meditating is also another idea. So all that goes away and your mind is directly in touch with one sensation and there's one awareness. It is pure awareness, nothing added. No concept added. You are not even thinking about arising and passing away. You are not even thinking about sensation and awareness even. Don't think about anything at all. Because we are in the habit of thinking, try to understanding by using this thinking process. So this thinking process happens in our left side of our brain. If you want to get a clearer idea, an interesting idea. So when we think, we use our left side of the brain. But meditation is something intuitive. So when we meditate, we use our right side of our brain. So if you understand how these two sides of the brain work, you will understand what you are doing when you are meditating. So be very clear about this. When we are really meditating, we are not trying to understand anything intellectually. No intellectual process. So thinking is an intellectual process. So we have to go beyond that. If we still try to use or take the help of this intellectual thinking, we will be stuck still in this ordinary reality. Because thinking is ordinary. If we really want to experience extraordinary reality, we have to let go of thinking. So before you meditate, read any book, try to find out what samadhi means, what nama means, what rupa means, what anicca means, what dukkha means, what anatta means. But when you really meditate, let go of all that. Just be directly in touch with whatever it is. Be very, very simple. You have to be as simple as possible. Just be in touch with the sensation. Don't try to think whether it's rising or passing away, whether it's dukkha or anatta, whether it's nama or rupa even. And without thinking, if you can stay like that for a long time, it will appear spontaneously, intuitively, what it is. And what it is something you cannot talk about. You cannot really talk about anicca actually. You cannot think about anicca actually. Because when you really experience it, it is something you cannot talk about. The moment you try to think about it, it is not there anymore. So that's why when you're meditating, you cannot say, oh, something's arising and passing away. Oh, that is anicca. At that moment, you are not meditating anymore. You are using your thinking process. You are in ordinary reality again. So it will happen naturally many, many times in your meditation practice, because we are used to thinking and analyzing. We think that only when we think about something, then we can understand it. We don't think that, if I don't think about anything, how can I understand that? So we try to go back to think and analyze and understand. So it will happen many, many times. When it happens, just look and say that thinking. Even thinking as this is nama is a thought. And when you think this is rupa, this is a thought. And when you think that, oh, this is arising and passing away, this is a nature, that's another thought. So watch those flashes of thought coming into your mind. So the more you can see it, the more you can let go, and it will become less and less. It will not go away immediately. Very difficult. But gradually, those flashes of naming will go away slowly and slowly. And then with no words arriving in your mind, you can be directly in touch with what is. And you will understand it without conceptualizing it. And if you can do that, the rest is quite easy. The difficulty is there. We always try to think about it. We get distracted. So if you can be really in touch with one sensation, one awareness, the rest will become quite easy. Gradually, I will explain about the stages of vipassana jnana, how it develops. It's very interesting, very natural. And actually, it is better for you not to know about this and just meditate. Because before I meditate, I haven't read these things. I just went into the forest and meditated. My teacher told me not to read any book. And quite often, I will go and listen to his Dhamma talks. After all, he said that, don't come to Dhamma talks. He won't let me come to listen to Dhamma talks even. Go away and just meditate. Don't come to Dhamma talks. If you have any question, then come. If you have no question, just meditate. Sometimes I try to get a book because I like to read. Get a book and read and try to hide the book somewhere. And then someday he'll ask me, are you reading? Oh, not much. Because I was really scared that he asked me. He said, "Don't read. You have read enough, and you will have more time to read later. Give up reading. Just meditate. Be in touch with your body and mind." So after I meditated for 3 years, then I started reading Dhamma Buddha. I found out, this is really serious in the book. Yes, I've experienced all those things, and now I found it that in the book. Then I have more confidence in the teaching. This is real. And what I did when I meditated, I did something very simple. Actually, I didn't do anything. I just tried to be in touch with what is happening right now. I found myself thinking. I tried to get in touch with my thoughts. At first, I'll be thinking for a long time. Then I remember, I'm thinking. Then I thought, where did I start? I tried to trace back the thought. It was very interesting how it links one thing to another, thoughts and ideas, it links. And I get to the starting point. I thought, I started here and I ended there, and the two has nothing to do. How it developed. And then slowly and slowly, I will start thinking, and then I catch myself thinking. And stop. But it's very hard to stay in that state. I have to get in touch with some other sensation immediately. Otherwise, I will start thinking about another thing. And slowly, I can see the words forming in my mind. Slow motion. Very interesting. Slow motion words, ideas coming in my mind. One thing after another, one word after another. And then it stopped again. And then later I found out that whenever I think about a word, there's some sort of emotion coming with that too, which is beyond words. And then later I found out that before I think about something, already there's some vague idea in my mind about what I want to think. About a person, about a food, about something to do. Before I form a word in my mind, I have a very vague feeling of what it is. Something is coming up. Very subtle. And when I become aware of that something coming up, it disappears again. And I settle down again. Because when there is something coming up, I was not in a really settled state. My mind has some sort of agitation. It is jumping. Pushing. Something is pushing up. So when I become aware of this feeling or emotion or a desire to do something, even a desire to drink a cup of water, a glass of water even, I can see the desire. Sometimes I can see this cup of water in my mind, the image of a cup of water. When I want to drink, I see this water pot, the image of the cup of water, and I feel the thirsty sensation. And when I become aware of that, it disappears again, and my body and mind both settle down again. So, all the time, there's something churning inside, like a pot boiling. So the more you become aware of that, the more it cools down and settles down and settles down. And then I just stop thinking. Not doing anything actually. The awareness is just there. I was not trying to be aware of anything. Just there, just like a big piece of glass, mirror I mean. Just there. Everything that passes in front of the glass is reflected in the glass. The glass is not trying to take any object. The object passes, the sensation happens, already automatically it's aware of that, it goes away. So, the awareness is just there, not doing anything. So at that stage, meditation is not something you do. Meditation is something that's happening naturally. But it will take some time to get there. So one person said that you've been meditating for a long time, maybe you forgot how hard it is for a beginner. I think that is true. Because when I think about that again, I found out that in the beginning I wanted to run away. I felt so hopeless. I thought, this is not for me, although I really want to do that. Because I had the habit of thinking too much. I like to read psychology, philosophy, comparative religion. It makes me think too much. I like to become a writer also, so sometimes I'll be sitting and meditating and I'll be writing an article, Dhamma article, wonderful thoughts coming in my mind, wonderful ideas developing in my mind. I thought, this is wonderful. I have to write that. Nobody has ever thought like me. I can really explain these things. I can really inspire. Then my teacher said, don't write. Don't even make a record of your meditation. Because if you try to keep a record, when you sit and meditate, you will think, ah, this is wonderful, and I'll write that down. At that moment, your meditation is gone. You can go beyond that. So you have to even let go of your insight. This is happening, okay, let go, let go. So you see how much you have to let go? We get attached to our understanding, our deep understanding. So, today I think we have used up time for talking. And next week I'll get deeper into insight, clearer idea about how insight develops. But I'll tell you what to do so that you get the idea. But when you meditate, forget about what I said. You have to try very hard to do that. Oh, he said that. Forget about all the things I said and just be very simple. And I'm giving you a very clear idea about where you are going so that you will not feel lost. Just to make you feel more confident. But don't rely on what I said. What I said are just words. Just words. You have to go beyond all these words. So if you have any questions, please. It's easier for me to explain when you ask a question. So when you are asking a question, you are helping me and you are also helping others. Yes? The word Kanika Samadhi is very... most people don't understand clearly what it means, because when you translate that, it means momentary concentration. And what does the word momentary mean? So it has this name, Kanika Samadhi, so that we can talk about different samadhi. So in Jhana Samadhi, Apana Samadhi or Upachara Samadhi, this absorption concentration or excess concentration, the mind is in touch with the concept which doesn't change. So the object of samadhi is something that doesn't change. But the object of vipassana is a process, not a thing, not a concept, not an idea, but a process. So that means the object of vipassana is something changing. So something changing means it stays for a while and goes away. So for the time being, the object is there, the awareness is there. The awareness of that object is there, because awareness and object, they arise together. When the object is not there anymore, the awareness of that object is not there anymore. It's gone. But new object arises, and the mind is aware of that also. So because the object lasts only for a moment, the awareness or the samadhi for that object lasts only for a moment, naturally. But this awareness repeats again and again on different objects. It might be just breathing, but continuously aware of that. So in-breath and out-breath are two different things. Even the sensation that's happening in one breath is changing. It takes about 2-3 seconds, and it changes quite a lot. So even though it repeats, the same thing repeats again and again, still there's a kind of change. For example, say, if you touch like this many times, even though you feel the same thing, every time it is a new sensation. So if you are aware of every time you touch yourself like this, you are developing Kanika Samadhi. And you can stay with this Kanika Samadhi for a long time. It might be for a few seconds, and it will become a few minutes, and it can become a few hours even. So some people, when they develop very deep Samadhi in meditation, Vipassana meditation, they get the awareness and the sensation or the object, anything, get like glued. It's like you, something very sticky, you throw that to the wall and stick there. In the beginning, it's like you are throwing a tennis ball to the wall. It touches the object and bounces back. But after a while, you throw something like sticky, it goes and sticks there. So although the object is arising and passing away, your mind, your awareness is continuously aware of that arising and passing away. There's a continuity there. So because the object is changing, we call the samadhi Kanika Samadhi. So it doesn't mean that just by developing a few seconds of concentration, we can develop deep wisdom or even attain liberation. But we begin with this a few second concentration and develop that into more and more seconds and become a 1 minute and 2 minutes and 3 minutes, it can go on. And it will stay for a minute or two, and then you get distracted a few seconds, and you're aware of that and you're back. It happens like that. Because in jhana samadhi, real jhana samadhi, you can determine that I'll be with this object for an hour without distraction. It's just like you are hypnotizing yourself and giving yourself suggestion, and you can stay with that object for an hour without moving. But with vipassana, the object is always changing. So no matter how many objects changes, it doesn't matter. As long as you are aware of it, it's okay. And in a certain stage of vipassana meditation, just like what I said just now, your awareness is there. You have developed this awareness so that you are aware, and one thing after another arising and passing away in front of you. Just like you are sitting, looking out from the window, you see one car after another going. You are not trying to think about the cars, whether it's a Toyota or whether it's a Mazda or whatever, it's green or yellow or white. You are aware of that. One thing after another going away. No choice. So, in the beginning of meditation, you choose a suitable object of meditation, breathing or rising and falling, or whether it's touching sensation in your body, whatever suitable. And after a while, you have no choice anymore, you stay aware. The object might change all the time, but your awareness is continuous. So in meditation, things always change. Meditation experience doesn't stay the same all the time. Sometimes your mind can get absorbed into one thing, and you see this same type of sensation. Not one thing, but the same type. Let's say you touch like this, it's the same type of sensation, although it's not one sensation. But the same type of sensation arising and passing away, you can see the object, you can see the awareness, both arising and passing away very quickly. Sometimes you become aware of different things arising and passing away. Not the same thing, not the same type of object, different types of objects arising and passing away very fast. But no matter how fast they arise and pass away, you can keep up with it. Just like a juggler juggling balls and rings, many things at the same time, your awareness becomes like that. One thing after another arising and passing away, still you are aware of everything passing away. So don't expect that your meditation will be the same always. Sometimes your awareness becomes very broad. It has very broad scope. Sometimes it goes down and down and down and down to one thing, only one very subtle thing. But sometimes you need to understand when the scope becomes too broad and when you cannot keep up with it anymore, you lose your concentration. You get distracted. At that time you should understand that now I need to close down. But when you get close down and down to one thing, the more you become concentrated on one object, the more subtle the object becomes, and after a while, you don't seem like it. It seems like it's disappearing. You cannot experience that anymore. It happens sometimes. The samadhi becomes too strong, and you lose the object, the clarity of your object sometimes. So in that kind of situation, you need to choose another thing, two things, so that you keep awake. You get absorbed in samadhi sometimes. It becomes like samatha sometimes. You don't see arising and passing away anymore. You get absorbed and still. So in vipassana samadhi, just to be absorbed and still and calm is not enough. You need to see the characteristic of the object. So there are two characteristics of the object in meditation. One is natural characteristics, another thing is shared characteristic. Natural characteristic means, let's say, hardness or softness is natural characteristic. Heat and cold, that's also natural characteristic. But hardness and softness is not the same as heat and cold. They are different. But what is common is that
they both arises and passes away. That is common, shared. So this natural, inherent characteristic is called sabhava lakana. And this shared characteristic, which means whatever it might be, everything arises and passes away. And they are common in that regard. And this is called common characteristic, which in Pali means samanya lakana, shared or common, something common. Sabhava lakana, inherent quality or inherent characteristic.